T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It is the John Chuckery Show. Hanging out with you in the Kia Studios on a Thursday night. 1 hour in the books. Here till 11 o'clock with you. 404-741-0929. That is our phone line. It's also our Solomon Brothers Diamond text line to interact with the show. Don't forget, we are streaming online. Go to 929thegame.com. Catch the show live, replays, interviews, breaking sports news, all of it at our new and improved website, 929thegame.com. Download your radio.com app. That way, when you're on the go and on the move, you can listen to us anywhere that you are. Put it on any device that you got, your phone, your tablet, laser disc player, boombox, turntable, Sega Genesis, Commodore 64, Texas Instruments calculator. I don't know. Whatever you got for a device, just go ahead and load it onto there. All the social media for the station, you can find us at 929thegame, at 929thegame, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all of it available to you. Interact with us, like us, follow us, mingle, whatever they do nowadays. Swipe right on any of, I don't know what they do on all those platforms. But the best way, as always, to follow along with this particular show and be a part of it and interact with us is through our personal Twitter handles. I'm the guy in front of the microphone. I'm at JMCH316, at JMCH316, or your water cooler talking points 3 to 6 months in advance of anybody else that is out there. He is behind the glass producing the show. Looks great tonight. At JarvisD90, Jarvis Davis, at JarvisD90. We'll talk to our buddy Chris Goforth as we got college football game time coming up. First edition of it this coming Saturday. Myself, Chris, and this week John Fricke will be in because Randy's got prior commitments. They're out and about somewhere, aren't they? Twin Peaks or somewhere or whatever like that. So he's a big-time radio guy now. So when he can squeeze us in on a Saturday, if he's not whacking it around, when he can squeeze us in on a Saturday, Randy will be part of the show. So SEC Media Days in the books, everything wrapped up, another successful edition. Of course, next year it will be right here in Atlanta. Excited about that. Enjoyed it when I was here in Atlanta last year. Looking forward to it again this year. We've been kind of going through some of the clips and some of the talk about what it is. There hadn't been very many storylines. I can tell you, Chris and I were talking about this. You know, you'll hear in about 15 minutes from now. Wasn't a whole lot of storylines coming out of SEC Media Days. Nothing real kind of hot takey. One thing that was a little bit, kind of made me scratch my head a little bit is, Alabama trying to play the victim card. Alabama trying to play a little bit of the woe is me card. Okay. Let's start with Nick Saban, Lord Saban. By the way, did you see the crowds when Lord Saban was going to come down the elevator? That's normal. That's what they do, out there. Here's Lord Saban talking about Darth Saban talking about that loss to Clemson in the national title game.
At the end of the season that we'd like to have as a team. I don't think that our preparation so that we could win a game and be very responsible and accountable to do our job at a high level on a consistent basis was what it needed to be. And whether or not people were worried about personal outcomes more than they were team outcomes, it's always hard to judge that. But it seems like we had a lot of distractions at the end of the year.
It seemed like a lot of woe was me in that clip, by the way. Don't all great programs have lots of distractions at the end of the year? Didn't Georgia have their DC and OC end up leaving? Were those distractions? I mean, doesn't every program at that level? I mean, literally, short of Brent Venables, who never leaves Clemson, because every time there's talk about what job he'd be available for, he gets another $1 million raise. Okay, short of him, every spot in the country when you have those high-level guys have guys on the move. You have distractions and coaches and things like that. You've got guys, teams at that level have all kinds of guys ready to go to the NFL. Right? I mean, people were like, well, if Trevor Lawrence could go to the NFL this year, he'd go to the NFL. Oh, okay. Isn't he just a true freshman? He's going to the NFL? Okay. Huh. So, I mean, with all due respect to Nick, and I get what he's saying, but Every team goes through those kinds of distractions. Every good program at that level. And by the way, what's different about this year for Nick Saban than any other year? Like, when have they not had coaches moving all around all the time? He replaces half his staff every year. Half his team is gone from one year over the other because they're all first-team All-Americans ready to go to the NFL. So I don't understand what was different about Clemson other than the fact that maybe Clemson's just a lot better. Now, if you want to tell me honestly that Tua getting hurt, you know, really the last half of the year affected them, maybe. Maybe. Or maybe they just weren't better than Clemson. I mean, is there a possibility that that could be what it is? Could it be a possibility sometimes in life, Jarvis, that it's not what you didn't do, it's what the other people did? Right? I mean, maybe it's not what Alabama wasn't able to do. Maybe it's about Clemson was that damn good. I mean, are there 10 teams in the history of college football you take over that Clemson team? I mean, you know, they're pretty stacked and pretty loaded. Now, Nick Saban, we just talked about coaches moving, all that good kind of stuff. It always happens. Here's him talking about how he can be a hard guy to work for.
There's been a lot made about your staff turnover, the amount of coaches that have been turned over on your staff. Are you difficult to work for?
Well, I don't know. You have to ask some of the people that work for me. It's always interesting that, you know, they may say that, but then when they get a job and they go do it, they do it exactly like we did it. So, I don't know.
You know, I heard some good stories about George O'Leary over the years and some guys that worked for him, especially down in Central Florida and stuff like that, hanging around down there. All guys in that position are not going to be easy to work for. You don't, let me put it this way. As a guy who is a manager, okay, you don't get to be Nick Saban's level of success and not be always pleasant and a joy to work for. You think Bill Belichick's a joy to work for? You think Bill Parcells was you don't think Bill Parcells and Bill Belichick didn't have their battles, huh? Were those guys pretty good, though? Yeah. Made some magic, didn't they? I mean, I guess I understand the question. I don't know. Do I? I mean, is it unreasonable to think that Nick Saban's probably a little cantankerous sometimes? Probably likes to have his way. You know why he can? He's got 5 national titles. Funny how you can, you know what? Funny how, what is it? If you're, you know, you can, you know, it, when you're like a billionaire, you become eccentric, right? You're not crazy, you become eccentric, right? When you win 5 national titles, you know, you can have a little a-hole in you. Like when I have some a-hole in me, people just say I'm an a-hole. You know, when Nick Saban has a-hole in him, he's eccentric, right? Is that how that works? So, yeah, focused. Yeah, he's focused, you know. When I do something, you know, I mean, it's you know, I'm being an a-hole. He's cantankerous, you know. Yeah, intense, yes. He's intense. That's what it is. I'm an a-hole. He's intense. That's what 5 national titles will get for you. So, well, one of the other teams that a lot of talk about, and especially their head coach about whether or not, you know, he's going to be there for the long term, the Auburn Tigers made their appearance today, and head coach Gus Malzahn. Here's Gus talking about calling this offense, because I don't understand why he wouldn't be calling the offense.
Yeah, when I decided to go back and call plays, and you know, that's who I am. I'm an offensive guy. That's what got me to where I'm at. 3 years ago, you get advice and all that, and of course, I made a mistake. You know, when Chip left, which Chip is an outstanding football coach, and he's going to do great at Troy, but when he left, it's just the reality, like, what now? And just decided to get back to being me and calling plays, and it's been a very refreshing thing. I know the bowl game, we played very well, but just, you know, when I'm back in the swing of things, the day in, day out, coaching on the field, what happens is the whole team takes on my personality. It just feels natural. I wasn't real good at standing back and watching.
I've said this many times before on any show that I think that 2 of the best play callers in America are Bobby Petrino, best offensive coaches in America, are Bobby Petrino and Gus Malzahn. You know, everywhere Gus Malzahn, I don't care if it was at Tulsa, I don't care if it was in Arkansas, I don't care if it was in Arkansas State, I don't care if it's his time in Auburn. You know, He is a great play caller. He's a great, not good, he's a great offensive-minded coach. Now, you better have Nick Marshall and guys like that that can run his particular system. I don't like Jared Stidham. I don't think Stidham was a fit. I think that's why he changed. He realized Stidham doesn't fit what I want to do. There are certain aspects about Gus's offense that you need to have. You need to have that quarterback that can truly be a dual threat guy and can be a run first quarterback if you need to. He also needs that hammer in the backfield. You know, when his offense is rolling is when it's Cameron Artis Payne, Trey Mason, Darren McFadden, right? When he's got that 1,600, I don't mean 1,000, 1,100. I'm talking 1,600, 18 touchdown running back in his backfield that can carry that load. That's when his offense is rolling. Here's Gus also talking about, because a lot of people think he could be on the hot seat, even with that big contract and buyout that he's got. Here's him talking about being on the hot seat.
Yeah, when I decided to go back and call plays, and you know, that's really, that's, you know, who I am. I'm an offensive guy. That's what got me to where I'm at.
Well, look, there's always somebody that's got enough money to buy out a contract. Nobody's ever safe for all of that. I don't know who's going to play quarterback at Auburn. I know we talked a little bit about it. They don't have their quarterback set. That's never good for a Gus Malzahn offense. They've been dreadful. They were dreadful last year running the football. Dreadful. Like one of Gus's worst running teams ever. You know, everything that Gus wants to do, they couldn't do last year. It's great to have Stidham and his high completion percentage, but he didn't win you enough games. Can't do enough things to win you enough games. One last clip I'm going to play for you here before we get to break is Vanderbilt head coach Derek Mason. Here's Derek Mason talking about Kirby Smart and the relationship that they have.
We spent some time together this summer, okay, at the Nike coaches trip, and I felt like we were kindred spirits, man. We're you know, brothers from another mother. I mean, it truly felt that way.
Yeah, I mean that's a cool thing. I mean, you hear about some of these coaches and the relationships that they develop. Yeah, they're rivals, and don't forget Georgia and Vanderbilt are going to play week one, coming right out of the chute with an SEC game, and Georgia's going to go up there and thump them. But anyway. If I'm Vanderbilt, Vaughn's going to carry it 52 times in that game. Try to keep their offense off the field. Okay, when we get back, our buddy Chris Goforth from College Football Game Time is going to join us and wrap up SEC Media Days and get his thoughts about it. It's all next. Just the John Chuckery Show in the Key Studios. Sports Radio 929 The Game. Sports Radio 929 The Game. It is the John Chuckery Show here on live from the Key Studios on a Thursday night. It's SEC Media Days officially wrapped up in the books. Getting ready for next year when it will be in Atlanta. Here to help us recap everything, let's go out to the waitfor.com hotline. It's my guy, Chris Goforth, of course, host here on Sports Radio 99 The Game, and one-third of College Football Game Time, along with he, myself, and Randy McMichael will be together this Saturday. Actually, be John Frickian for Randy on Saturday from 9 to noon as the inaugural College Football Game Time show gets ready to kick off. Afternoon to you, Chris.
Hey, John. How are you?
Man, doing good, doing good. So give me, as you are officially back in your part of the world and everything, give me one or two takeaways that you pulled from the 4 days of SEC Media Days. It's your pretty quiet stuff, but what did you kind of gather from what you saw?
Yeah, you're right. I think it was relatively quiet. I guess, Alabama probably made the most noise yesterday with Dylan Moses and his his comments about Georgia being a tougher opponent than what Clemson was, and some of the things that Nick Saban had to say about what happened against Clemson. Not that he was, I don't think necessarily that Saban was trying to take anything away from Clemson. Now, I think that's the way some people have chose to interpret that, but I don't necessarily think that that was his intent. I think really what it was that he was trying to say was, he talked a lot about how he thought his team had a lot of distractions in the second half of the year. And, John, as we talked about on College Football Game Time last year, you go back, after that LSU game last year, Alabama really didn't play that well. I mean, they had to, they struggled to get the win over Georgia, had to go to a backup quarterback to win that game. They couldn't stop Oklahoma in the second half of that game. And then, of course, we know how it went in the national championship. So those were probably the biggest things that come away. You come away with it. for me, the thing that I enjoy most about being there, look, we hear from these coaches all the time, but we don't often get a chance to hear from the players. And I think that's one of the things that really separates the SEC from the other conferences, because look at the guys that were there. You had arguably the two best defensive players in the country in Grant Delpit and Dylan Moses there this week. You had arguably two of the at least three best quarterbacks in the country in Tua being there and Jake Fromm being there. The head coach at Vanderbilt, Derek Mason, sorry, I went blank for a minute. Derek Mason said today he thinks his tight end in Jared Pinkney, that if he would have come out, who's an Atlanta native, by the way, that if he would have come out, that he would have been a first or a second round pick in the last draft, said he thought he was the best in-line blocking tight end and pass-catching tight end in the country. So the stars come out when it's SEC Media Days.
You know, it's funny about that, though, Chris. They come out when they're juniors and seniors. They don't come out when they're freshmen and sophomores. I mean, most coaches don't bring those kids out. You know, they don't bring the Tuas and the Jake Fromms until they get to that upperclassman status, though.
Yeah, no, and I think there's a lot to go into that. I think maturity is a huge part of that. And I think it's always guys that, you know, you're picking guys that have been there, that have been through the battles. Those are the guys that you want to bring, because in a large way, they're kind of, they're representing their universities when they take the stage. And as we saw with Dylan Moses and his comments earlier this week, what you say, it can take off and go viral in a hurry.
Chris Goforth joining us on the waitfor.com hotline as SEC Media Days wrapped up. It is a little bit funny, though, I heard what you said, but there is a little bit of Alabama's got the woe is me syndrome for last year. And I get it. Tua was hurt. There's a lot of things that played into it. But it is kind of funny that the co-1A, 1B program in America is kind of a little bit of, you know, I guess maybe wanting people to feel sorry, or just kind of like there's a little bit of woe is me, or all shucks, man, it just didn't kind of go our way. I think they've lost, what, two regular season games in 4 years or something stupid like that?
That's been the kind of the talk on Alabama radio, or at least on Jocks radio in Birmingham over the last couple of days since all of this went down, was kind of the feeling that, you know, Saban was giving out a lot of excuses, as to how or why they lost that game. I think he had some comment about how they had, he thought his team had a lot of distractions, and I interpreted it as though it was almost he was talking just as much, if not more, about his assistant coaches, the guys who left the program for other jobs in the offseason, that they might have had their mind on something else rather than the preparation that it takes to get ready to play a couple of college football games. So, but that's been the hot topic down in Birmingham the last couple of days, at least on local radio.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It is the John Chuckery Show. We're out on the waitfor.com hotline. So I got Chris Goforth from College Football Game Time. You hear him on the weekends here, as well as we recap some SEC Media Days. You talked about the stars and the quarterbacks and everything. Did Gus Malzahn steal any quarterbacks? Because I don't know who's going to play at that program.
Yeah, I'm not sure that he knows right now either. If I had to put money on it, I'd say it's going to be Bo Nix, but it's down to Nix and Joey Gatewood. He did say that those two guys had kind of separated themselves. He said that was pretty obvious in spring practice, that it was going to be one of those two guys. He was not willing to give a date and say, all right, the middle of August, we'll name a starter. He said it's one of those things that you know when you know. He said they really didn't know what Nick Marshall was until they saw him one day in practice, and then he said, it became very obvious to all of us that day that we found our quarterback now. It's Nick Marshall. And I think he went all the way till seems like maybe the third week in August before he actually named Nick Marshall the starter. So I would expect we'll learn a little more about how that's going to shake out in the next couple of weeks once they actually get practice started.
Chris, I saw where Derek Mason, and I heard some of the clips where he's talking a lot about, Keshawn Vaughn, and, it's kind of funny. I mean, they had a pretty good running back a couple of years ago, and they couldn't figure out a way to run the football, and now are they going to finally try to get back to trying to run the football with Vaughn? I mean, because they've been dreadful running it, and they had one of their best runners in the history of the program the last couple of years.
Yeah, I think they're going to have to because, you know, the Shermer kid that was playing quarterback, he's gone. So they're going to have a first-year starter at quarterback. So, and he talked a lot about wanting to have a, you know, kind of a blue-collar mentality, that that's who he was. He made reference to what David Shaw has done at Stanford. It's not flashy. It's blue-collar. What Pat Fitzgerald has done at Northwestern, it's not flashy. It's blue-collar, and that's kind of what he wanted. I would think with, you know, having a first-year starter at quarterback, whether it's Deuce Wallace or Riley Neal, whoever ends up winning that job, that they're going to have to rely heavily on Keyshawn Vaughn, the guy that Mason said he's faster than Ralph Webb. So we'll see. He said 220 pounds, Mason said Vaughn ran the 40 in 4.39 is what he said.
You know, we talked a little bit about this the other night. And I assume we'll get the final vote. I don't know if you voted or not for the preseason teams or the winners and things like that. But was there any buzz about anybody realistically thinking that somebody not named Alabama or Georgia is going to represent the SEC in the championship game or represent the SEC or, you know, the SEC in the playoff? I mean, is there really much of any buzz concerning any other team that, hey, this is a group to look at? I don't know, LSU, Florida, take A&M. I mean, take your pick. But I just can't imagine a vibe down there of anybody really thinking that outside of Georgia, Alabama, there's somebody who can contend for the title this year.
No, nothing seriously. I think everybody – now, that doesn't mean there's not going to be some kook from Missouri that's
right.
Going to, you know, it'll vote Missouri number one.
But right.
I think for the most part, everybody – I'd be really shocked if there's any other first-place votes other than Alabama in the West and Georgia in the East.
I mean, Chris, doesn't it seem like that the SEC is – how do I want to say this? It's less competitive at the top than it's been in a long time. I mean, even when Tebow was rolling at Florida, hell, Georgia had some pretty good teams with Mark Richt. It wasn't like Georgia was a 7-5 team. Hell, they were, you know, a 10-win team, you know, against Tebow and those guys. But it just seems like the SEC this year especially, it's about as top heavy and separated, and we're gonna talk about this Saturday too, just top heavy and separated as I can actually remember a single year.
No, I think there's a huge divide. I think you've got a clear-cut one and two, and then I think you have a next group that, you know, I'd probably put LSU in, probably put Florida in, probably put Texas A&M in. I think that's probably the next group, maybe Auburn, maybe. And then after that, everybody else is fighting for the Belt Bowl.
Yeah, yeah. Chris, last question for you. Who do you think did themselves well over these last few days? Who kind of came off looking pretty good and you know, maybe rallied the troops and is somebody to maybe keep an eye on, player, coach, anything like that?
Yeah, I'll tell you, there's one, and I think I said this to Dukes and Bell the other day, that I thought Jeremy Pruitt, now in year two at Tennessee, looked much more comfortable, much more in command, much more in control. There wasn't the deer in headlights. I thought he was very smooth in how he handled himself and how he handled his, his press conference. Say the same thing about his quarterback and Jarrett Garantano. I thought Garantano, of all the guys, he may be the most impressive kid that I saw this week. Just how he handled himself. I think I told you the other night, the fact that he said, you know, I want to apologize to Tennessee fans because this isn't what we expect, and we know this isn't what the fans expect. I thought that was a huge move for that young man to make.
Keep up with Chris on Twitter. Follow him at ChrisGoForth1. He is one-third of our college football game time team. It's going to be myself, him. It'll be Randy McMichael regularly. Randy will be off this Saturday. But 9 to noon this coming Saturday, college football game time, first edition coming up. Join us here on the WadeFord.com hotline. Be good, Chris. We will see you Saturday morning, man. Rest up and get ready for the season, man. I'm glad we're finally getting together and getting these shows going.
Same here, John. Looking forward to it, man. I'll see you bright and early Saturday.
You got it. It's John Chuckery on the John Chuckery Show, live from the Key Studios. We'll be back. Sports Radio 929 The Game. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Welcome back into the Kia Studios. It is the John Chuckery Show with you here till 11 o'clock.
404-741-0929. That is our phone line. It's also our Solomon Brothers Diamond text line. That is the way to interact with us. The best way to be a part of the show is through our Twitter. I am at JMCH316, at JMCH316. He is at JarvisD90. Still plenty to get into tonight. We got our Falcon flyover coming up at 9 o'clock. We'll take a little bit deeper dive into Debo's contract. And also, too, now that we have kind of the numbers on Grady Jarrett, we can kind of see the savings that they get for all of that. That's life. We'll hear from Jason Longshore, who joined Dukes and Bell. So busy, busy, busy second half of the show. But before we get into all of that, let's get to What's Bugging Chuckery.
Don't look now, but somebody out there just got Chuckery ticked off. Like, that's hard.
Don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
It's time for What's Bugging Chuckery on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Okay, maybe I'm making more of this than what it really is. You know, leave it to me to kind of blow something out of proportion and all that good kind of stuff. But the man who got cited for flashing a laser at Tom Brady, quarterback for the Patriots out there, pled guilty to disturbing the peace on Wednesday and was fined $500. Dywan Morgan, D-W-Y-A-N. That sound right? Dywan Morgan, 64, by the way. Okay? 64, of Lee's Summit, Missouri, had been cited in April and faced up to a year in jail and a fine of up to $1,000. Okay? Now, they said that Brady was unaware of the laser being flashed at him and all that good kind of stuff. Okay? Morgan has been banned from Arrowhead Stadium for life, which is good. Lasers are prohibited at NFL games, obviously. It says that a cameraman from Kansas City shot the video that showed the green dot flicking around Brady's shoulder and face, and footage was posted after the game, which the Patriots won 37-31. Morgan told Inside Edition in May that he was surprised to be cited by prosecutors and I shouldn't have done it, although he said he wasn't going to apologize to Brady or the Patriots. Okay, a-hole, how about this then? Why did he not get the year in jail and the $1,000 fine? Okay, first of all, at 64 years old, okay, obviously he's only 24 mentally. Because who at 64 years old says, let me get my laser pointer and try to blare it in Tom Brady's eye? Like, who does that? Okay, and if at 64 years old, that's the kind of life that you're living, you should be in jail for a year and pay the $1,000 fine. Now, again, I don't know, maybe I'm making too much of things like this, but how do you dissuade bad behavior if there really aren't you think for some jabron that if he gets a $500 fine, that's enough incentive to not want to do this again? You think they see that the consequence was, well, it could be jail and it could be a $1,000 fine, but it's only going to be $500. You don't think the next Gavone that walks in there thinking he can do the same thing? Hell, if I'm going to get a $500 fine. You know, you can't curb bad behavior by rewarding the outcome for it. If the fine is $1,000 and you could get a year in jail, make an example of the guy. If at 64 years old your life has gotten to where you feel like you have to point a laser in Tom Brady's face to get recognition or for whatever reason, like, what's the reason that you do that at 64 years old? So if that's where your life is at, then I need to readjust your life for you. Here's a year in county. Here's $1,000, which you probably haven't made in your life in a month. And you're going to pay this. And yeah, I'm painting with a broad brush. Screw you. Okay? Like, at some point, stop rewarding bad behavior. These things drive me crazy. Punish somebody. You know, why set the example of, well, you know, wasn't that big a deal. Okay. Till it is a big deal. Because that's what we do in society is, it's not a big deal until it's a big deal. And then it's, well, why didn't we do something before? I don't know, you had 500 chances to fix it, but you didn't. So I'd have given the guy a year in jail. I wouldn't have been lenient on him. I don't care if he is 64. Guess what? You're going to the Hooskow. How about that? You're in the Hooskow, and you're going to pay that fine. Or you can go pick up trash. How about that? How about at 64 years old, I'll put you in an orange jumpsuit, and you can go pick up trash on the side of the road and wave to everybody. And they can toss your cookies out the window or whatever like that. Now, One other quick thing I wanted to get into as well. I don't know. Is this good news or bad news that a couple of horses died after colliding, but this time it wasn't in Santa Anita? Maybe for the first time all year, two horses that died actually didn't happen at Santa Anita. Thursday morning, after colliding in an accident during training hours at Del Mar Racetrack in California, two horses suffered fatal injuries. They both had to be euthanized out there. I swear, I'm not kidding you when I say this. As soon as I saw two horses die as the headline, I was like, well, hell, what the hell? What? Two more horses died already at Santa Anita. Because, you know, they lead the world and every horse dies out there. Like, it's like there's betting odds now on how many horses die. What do we say? The number is, there's like 27 horses since December 26th that have died out there. And yet they won't close down. So I can tell you, at this point in life, as soon as I see that horses are dead, I just assume that Santa Anita has killed two more horses. But this time it was two horses colliding out there. So I don't know if that's good news or bad news, but you can figure all that that kind of stuff out. And that's what's bugging Chuck Reed. 404-741-0929. That's our Solomon Brothers Diamond text line. Texter says that the loss of pick stop of the Patriots from cheating. I don't know. You know, they basically did. You know, Bill Cowher went on. Bill Cowher went on radio, right, in Pittsburgh, and said every team does that. You know, the whole filming thing and all that kind of stuff. Remember all that? Remember that, Jarvis? Okay. Does anybody remember the interview that Bill Cowher did on Pittsburgh radio where he said everybody does that same thing, they just got caught? I'm not telling you it's not cheating, but at the same time, every team was doing it out there. Every team was doing the same exact thing. Now, did it stop them from cheating? I don't know. I don't know. I mean, again, is manipulating, to me, is manipulating the footballs really cheating? Is that kind of where we're at? I guess maybe it is. I guess because maybe the rule says it. Although every single quarterback and everybody else in football does that same thing or whatever like that. I mean, I'm all for punishing. I mean, if you break the rules and they're egregious, I'm all for punishing, you know, everybody. Just make sure everybody gets the same punishment. I mean, when Bill Cowher comes on the radio and says that, yeah, what the Patriots did is what we all do. We all do that. The difference is the Patriots, for whatever reason, the Patriots ended up getting caught for all of it. So as long as you punish everybody equally on something like that, that's fine. I don't know what the precedent is for cheating like that. I don't know what the precedent is for that. I know what the precedent is for this guy with the laser pointer, because it says he could get a year in jail and a $1,000 fine. So that's that is established. He could get that, okay? So if he can get that, why not give it to him? I don't know what the precedent is on videotaping from the sideline. Like, I don't know the last team that did it, how many draft picks they lost, or what's the rule say, this is what you get or don't get for all of it. If there's precedent, then put that into place. I'm all for that. If breaking that rule means you lose four first-round draft picks, okay, then you lose four first-round draft picks, whoever you are, as long as you know that going into it. Now, you know going into it, you lose your four first-round draft picks. If the rule is break it and you get a year in jail and a $1,000 fine, but I'm going to reduce it down to $500, then where's the incentive to not do that again if I can get away with it? And by the way, how many teams want to actually lose draft picks in the NFL? Not very many. You know why the Patriots can do that? Because they got that guy at quarterback and that guy at coach. You know what they do? They make two trades and they picked all those draft picks right back up. They made two trades for two guys that they wanted to get rid of anyway, and they ended up getting the draft picks that they would have lost anyway. So, just because they're better than everybody. It was the good, the bad, the ugly at the British Open. By the way, we're gonna talk for a second about Tiger Woods, because I tried to tell you all this for years and y'all said I was wrong. But okay, all right, that's cool. We'll be back in the Key Studios. John Chuck on Sports Radio 910 The Game.
The secret's oat for nourishing your sensitive skin. Start each day with Aveeno's Daily Moisturizing Body Wash to gently cleanse and help preserve your skin's moisture barrier. Then slather on the Daily Moisturizing Body Lotion for 24 hours of clinically proven hydration. This powerful combo gives you 2 times the moisture in 2 easy steps, thanks to both nourishing oat formulas. Get softer, smoother skin and shop Aveeno now at Target.